Please turn with me to the book of Matthew. Matthew in chapter 6, something that Chad mentioned during his lesson, and we're going to pick up on it again this morning and make a little bit more comments on it. Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 19, starting with something that Jesus said. He says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Some powerful words that Jesus has for his disciples here. Some powerful words for us today. You remember Alan's comments last week at the contribution when he was talking about investment and how giving is like an investment, a spiritual investment? The question is, what are you willing to pay money for? And not just money, but what are you willing to invest your time and your energy in? And that is really what Jesus is talking about here. He's talking about laying up for ourselves treasures. What do you treasure? What do you value? What do you put emphasis on? And what do you choose to put into your life? And that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. But I want to use a slightly different analogy than what Alan used in his discussion about investment. An analogy about a basket. Have you ever stopped to think how fussy we are as shoppers? Seriously, it's amazing to me. You go to the grocery store, right? You grab the basket, and you go down the aisles, up and down the aisles, and you search for what you're eventually going to spend your money on. You look at the brand names. You look at the labels. You might even go so far, if you are a fussy shopper like I am, you might pick up the box, you might flip it over, and you might look at the nutritional information on there. Whoa, that's way too many carbs. Put it back. You might look at the ingredients list, and you might say, does this have the kind of ingredients that I'm looking for? Or maybe you just go and you just start shoving as much stuff as you can find in your basket. That's why you don't go shopping hungry. But we do that, right? And we get, for example, to the peanut butter aisle. And there's chunky peanut butter. There's smooth and creamy peanut butter. There's peanut butter with high fructose corn syrup. There's peanut butter that's all natural. And by the way, it's usually always in quotation marks, which I'm always a little dubious of. What do those quotation marks really mean? I don't know. But you can find cashew butter, almond butter. You can even grind your own peanut butter in some fancy grocery stores now. It's amazing to me. And if you're so inclined, you can find peanut butter that has jelly swirled into it already for those who might be a little bit more lazy. But that's just the peanut butter. And it's amazing to me that we ever make it out of the grocery store at all with that many choices. And that extends to almost anything you decide to buy in the store. And so you make your selections and you put your items into the basket and then you take it up to the register and you load it all up onto the conveyor belt and they check you out item by item by item and then you leave and go home. We're not talking about grocery shopping here. What we're really talking about is spiritual grocery shopping. Spiritual grocery shopping. We all have a spiritual grocery basket with us every day. And every day of our life, we are making choices about what to put into our bodies, to what to put into our minds. And what we put into that basket says a lot about what our values are and what we care about. Will we put wholesome things into our basket? Will we put nutritious things into our basket? Will we put satisfying things into our basket? Will we have thought about what it is that we really do treasure or value, as Jesus talks about here, and put things in there thoughtfully? Or will we get up to the counter, will we get up to the checkout line of judgment, in which God will investigate one by one the things we've put into that basket and ring us up? Will we be found to have a box of Twinkies? Will we be found to have a box of Pop-Tarts? Chad looked over at Abby there. I think they were excited about the Twinkies. Will we be found to have sugary cereal and sugary soda, or will we be found to have empty calories? Is that what we're going to have at the judgment? Or are we going to have thoughtfully chosen things in our basket? And what we put into that basket says a lot about what we value. So I want to use that analogy and talk about what it is that we really value, taking stock of our life and really asking the question, what's in your basket? Because every day you are deciding what it is you value, what it is you treasure, and what it is you are going to put into your life. And make no mistake, someday you will find yourself at the checkout, and you will have to give an account for the things that you've chosen and for the things that you've put into your life. What I want to do this morning is I want to look at three examples in the Bible of people who actually put things into their basket. I want to look at three of these examples, and I want to ask ourselves the question, are we putting the right kinds of things into our spiritual baskets? Really, do we value the right things? Do we invest our time and our money and our energy in the right kinds of things? Or are we just living our lives, Twinkies in hand, all for pleasure and all for comfort? And so let's go back to the book of Exodus, where we will see the first story of somebody who puts something into a basket. Exodus chapter 2, this is a very familiar story, hopefully for most everyone. A little bit of context here. The children of Israel are in Egypt. And the time of Joseph and his rule over the people is over. And a Pharaoh comes up who does not know Joseph, who does not care about the Hebrew people at all. And he says at the end of chapter 1 that every son that is born to the Hebrews shall be cast into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live. Pretty extreme. Pretty extreme. Kill all the baby boys. And so we see in the beginning of chapter 2, a man and a woman, a Levite couple, have a baby boy. And they know what is going to happen to this baby boy. They know if Pharaoh finds out that they had a baby boy, then he is going to die. And so what do? She takes this baby and puts him into a basket. Wraps him up, takes the basket, and puts it down into the river and lets the basket float away. Lets the basket float away. And eventually, we'll find out at the end here in verse 6, or in verse 5, now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe in the river while her young women walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant women, and she took it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. She took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrew children." Now, we know who this baby is, don't we? This is Moses. A very familiar story. And it seems to be such an insignificant mention of what his mother does. But do you think it was insignificant to her? Do you think it was trivial to her? I want you to put yourself in this woman's shoes. And I want you to see that she had great courage. She had great courage. I mean, think about it. Mothers, fathers, think about taking your three-month-old child and putting them into a basket and wrapping them up, tucking them in, going to the river, and putting the basket in the river. That's heartbreaking. What fear, what uncertainty, what a challenge it must have been for her to do that. And I don't know necessarily about her character because the Bible doesn't reveal it to us, but as a Levite woman, as a Hebrew woman, I can only imagine that she trusted that God would take care of the situation. She trusted that God would be with her, that God would be with that baby boy. And he was, wasn't he? He led Moses from that point on to become the most important figure that had ever lived, pretty much. He saved his people through God's help from slavery, brought them in to the land of promise, well, almost got them there. He gave them the law. He was a mouthpiece for God. I mean, this is amazing stuff here, but it all started with one woman's courage, with a mother's courage, not having any idea what was going to happen in the future. And I think the lesson for us is pretty clear from her example. We all face things in our life that we have no idea how they will turn out. We all face challenges. We all face difficulties. We all face situations. No, we've probably never had to send our baby down the river in a basket. But we've all had situations in our life where we've had to have courage and stand up and do the hard thing. But oftentimes, fear paralyzes us, doesn't it? We're so afraid, we're so concerned, we're so worried about a situation that we do nothing, that it freezes us up and we stop and we just don't act. What would have happened to his mother if she wouldn't have acted? Well, Moses probably would have died at the hands of Pharaoh. But she did act. Can you imagine doing that for your child, doing that for your baby? I mean, we can't even put our kids into the car without wrapping them in bubble wrap first. But she sends her son down the river, trusting God, believing that he would take care of it. And don't we see time and time again that God does take care of it? Can't we look back into the past with hindsight, some amount of hindsight in our own lives, and see that when we've stood up and we've actually had courage and we've done the hard thing, we've had a challenging conversation with a friend and it led to good things, we've seen a broken relationship and we've done the hard thing of fixing it, and now we're closer to that person than ever before. We've stood in the face of people who might give us some kind of backlash because of our faith, and we've stood up anyway and we've been good examples in this world to other people. Don't we see that God is taking care of us when we stand up and have courage? And so, have courage today. Put courage in your basket. Value courage. Love it and invest in it. Because that's a good, wholesome, spiritually satisfying thing that you can put into your life. And so are you doing that? Really is the question. And what I find interesting, I was just recently reading through the book of Revelation in Revelation chapter 21. And as John there is recording those who will experience the second death, those who will be cast into the lake of fire, do you know what the very first thing that he says about those who will be in that situation? You know the very first thing? The cowardly. Whoa, the cowardly? Yes. If you're cowardly, if you're afraid, if you're gripped by fear to the point where you don't do anything, God says the only place you will be is separated from him in agony. And that's sobering. It's something to think about for us all today. The third story is in the book of Acts in chapter 9. So if you'll turn over there with me. Acts chapter 9. We know the story of Saul and his conversion. He would eventually become Paul. And he saw the light. He was there in Damascus. And what happens? Well, the Jews find out that he had converted. He defected from the Jewish traditions that they were following. And so what do they want to do? They want to kill him. And so we see here in verse 23, when many days had passed, the Jews plotted to kill him. But their plot became known to Saul. They were watching the gates day and night in order to kill him, but his disciples took him by night and let him down through an opening in the wall, lowering him in a basket. What did they put in their basket? They put Paul in a basket, and they lowered him down the wall. They helped him escape. This is probably like the most Mission Impossible thing that has happened in the life of Paul. He's sneaking around, he's going by night, and him and his disciples, him and his friends, they do the work of letting him down the wall, and he escapes and runs away. This wouldn't be the first time that something similar to this happens. But this is probably the first time in Paul's life where he's faced something like this. What do we get from this? What do we learn from this? What we learn from this is that collaboration has to be in our basket. By the way, all the things that we're putting in baskets here start with a C, just in case you wanted to know. Collaboration has to be in our baskets because, look, Paul could not have made it out of the city in a basket by himself, could he? Could he have made it out of over that wall without his friends helping him? No. It doesn't appear like he could have. And so he calls on his friends, and they come to help, and they step in, and they do the dangerous work. I mean, we don't know very much about these disciples, but you can imagine that if the Jews were trying to kill Paul and they found out that these disciples were helping Paul, don't you think they'd be in danger too? But they step in, and they do the challenging thing of helping Paul in a difficult situation. And they put him in a basket, they let him over the wall, and he's able to escape and do many, many great things from that. What I think we need to see from that is that being a Christian is not a solo job. It's not. One of our great purposes here within the church is to help each other, to step in when times are challenging, to step in to help and bear each other's burdens and carry each other's loads and help people get over the challenging things in their own lives. But so often we say, and this happens more than I'd care to admit, but so often we say, it's none of my business. It's their problem. If they got themselves into that mess, they can get themselves out. Is that the kind of attitude that would have let Paul over the wall? If these disciples would have said that, well, it's just Paul's problem. I don't want to get involved. It's none of my business. I don't want to step in and put myself in danger. That would be irresponsible, right? Remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5? Blessed are the peacemakers. You and I may not be going through a challenging time, but we might know a brother or sister who might be, and we need to step in to help make peace for them. We might see two brothers who are at odds with each other, two brothers who are having challenging relationship troubles between themselves, and we may very easily say, well, it's none of my business. Let them take care of it. That's not what Paul did in the book of Philemon, was it? Paul grabbed Philemon, and he grabbed Onesimus, and he said, get together, guys. None of Paul's business. But he took it on himself to make a difference, didn't he? And what I find so interesting is when Paul is talking to Philemon, he uses a very specific word here in verse 17. He says, so if you consider me your partner, receive him as you would receive me. Paul is in partnership. He's collaborating with Philemon, and he's saying, get back together with Onesimus. Come back together. And you and I can all do this today. You and I can all work together today. Step in. Help. Look for opportunities to help. And I'm saying all this not because I think we have a challenging, troubling problem with this here, because I think we do a good job at this. But I think we can do more. And I think we can help people see the things maybe they can't see. We can see. Do you ever look at yourself and you say, wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror and you say, you know what? I'm holding a grudge. No. Because holding a grudge usually is transparent and invisible to you, right? But on the outside looking in, as a neutral third party, don't you see that very clearly? You can see that. And so as somebody who might not be involved, who might not be in the middle of the situation, you can step in and help, as Jesus said, be a peacemaker. Collaborate and bring people together, bring unity, bring the love back into the relationships between brothers and sisters in trial and conflict. And so let's put that into our basket. Let's put collaboration into our basket and work together. The last story, well, it's in the book of John. It's also in the book of Mark. Actually, it's in all the Gospels, I should say. Jesus, as he is looking at a group of people coming to him in Mark chapter 6, verse 34. Jesus is looking to a group coming toward him as he's sitting there on a mountain. And he sees them coming. And what does it say in verse 34? When he went ashore and saw a great crowd, he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so what does he do? Well, he teaches them. But then he realizes that they need food. And so he looks around for food, and none of his disciples can find food. They don't have enough money to buy food for 5,000 people. And so he finds the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he multiplies it to the point where every single person in that congregation there, in that assembly there, what happens to them? They're full. This is like buffet dining, right? They walk out of there full, and the abundance of Jesus and what he can do, they go and they take 12 baskets and they fill them up with leftovers. But what do they put in the basket? They put compassion in the basket. Jesus cared about the people enough to feed them. He cared enough about the people to do what needed to be done. Now, when you look at John's account and you find out that the next day these people come back, what do they want? More food, please? More food, Jesus? And Jesus tells them, no, you're following me for the food. I'm not giving you any food. And then he really says some challenging things to them, in which most of them leave. But Jesus, even knowing that they were going to be begging for food the next day, he doesn't stop having compassion on them. He still feeds them. He still takes care of them. See, this is what's interesting about Jesus. And this is what stands in stark contrast to so many teachers of his day. Jesus taught about loving your neighbor. Jesus taught about helping the poor. He taught about providing for the needs of other people. And then when faced with the opportunity to do something like that, he does it. He's not some hypocritical teacher. He teaches about feeding the poor, and he feeds the poor. And we need to put compassion in our baskets today. We need to have compassion on those who need it so badly. Because Jesus did, and we should too. We need to look around for opportunities to help others. Not so that they can look at us, not so that they can think that we are so great, but so that we can extend forward and pay forward what Jesus has so abundantly blessed us with. You ever stop and think about how abundantly you've been blessed? Hopefully every time we have the contribution, you think about that. How much has God blessed you? Is it to make you rich? Is it to make you wealthy and set up? No. It's so that you can pay it forward, so that you can pass it along, and so that you can help those who are in need. It's exactly what we see in Acts chapter 2 as the church is established. Those who had more sold what they had and gave it to those who had little, so that they could have all things in common. That is what loving our neighbor is all about, is helping them. Not only with important spiritual matters like the gospel, but even so far as Jesus would go on to say in the book of Matthew in chapter 25, in that great scene of the judgment, what is one of the things that will stand as a qualifier for their judgment? Verse 44 of Matthew 25, then they also will answer, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty? Hungry or thirsty? Or a stranger or naked or sick and in prison and did not minister to you? And then he will answer them, saying, truly, I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Feeding people, giving them water, taking care of their needs, really loving people. And that's what we have to be about, loving people. Because Jesus loved us enough to give us everything. And so compassion needs to be in our baskets. Love for our neighbor. It is, after all, the second great commandment. So I want to stop right there. That's three stories of people in the Bible who put things into their baskets. Do you value courage, collaboration, and compassion enough to put it in your basket? Through your life, are you putting these things into your life? Are you investing them in them? Are you valuing them enough to embrace them and put them into your life and make them a part of your life? And hopefully you are. Hopefully you have these qualities. Hopefully you're doing these things. But just like going through the grocery store and having your carb-free, free-range yogurt or whatever in the basket, you know, along with all of your other things that you have, all these nutritionally valuable, beneficial things, you bring it up and you put it on the checkout, and hiding underneath everything is the box of Twinkies, isn't it? That guilty pleasure that you tucked away just for yourself. Even more spiritually damaging is this next one. Because you might have courage, collaboration, and compassion in your baskets. But if you have this next one in your basket, then there's a big problem. And it goes back to Matthew chapter 5. You'll turn back there with me. Matthew chapter 5, the scripture reading we had at the beginning of our lesson. Matthew chapter 5, verse 14. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it where? Under a basket. What's in your basket? Is your light in your basket? Is your example in your basket? But they put it on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. And in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Sometimes we put concealment in our basket. It's like that box of Twinkies hiding underneath all the healthy food. We might have a lot of good things in our baskets. We might put a lot of good things into our life. But if we conceal our example, if we hide our lights and try to tuck that away in there, then we're not doing our jobs. Then we're not spiritually nourished by what we should be. And we're not functioning the way Jesus wants us to. It's empty. It's hollow. But so often, we let our shame, we let our discomfort with standing out, we let maybe a sense of false modesty keep us from shining our lights in this world. We don't want people to see who we really are. We don't want people to see what we really believe. We want to keep it tucked away because it's comfortable, it's convenient, and it makes us feel good, doesn't it? Oh, I don't ever have to put myself out there for people. I don't ever want people to have something bad to say about me. I don't want to just invite trouble in on myself by showing them what Christ's life is really like. But we can't hide our example, as Jesus says here. We've got to let our example shine as a light on a hill. We've got to let our lights shine so that people can see us. And so that people not only can see us, not because we want a pat on the back and we want congratulations. It's all about the glory of God, isn't it? That's the purpose. That's the whole goal here. And that's what he says. You should be glorifying your Father who is in heaven. And those who see your good works will do that. That's what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 12. Oh, they'll say terrible things about you. They will malign you and they will hate you. But then you know what they're going to do? They're going to look at your trust in the Lord and your courage. They're going to look at how you work together with your brothers and sisters and collaborate with them. They're going to look at how much you really have compassion, how much you really love each other and love your neighbor. And they're going to look at those things and they're going to say, there's something about God that I need to know more about. And they're going to glorify God. That's what happens when we let our light shine. So really, the question is, what's in your basket? Are you putting good, spiritual, nutritious, satisfying things into your life? Or are you hiding away those guilty pleasures of ease and comfort? Those Twinkies of life, if you want to think about them that way. Please take out your songbooks and turn to the number that's been announced. I've said it a bunch of times in lessons past, and I guess I'll say it again. Unlike going to the grocery store, discipleship does not come with a coupon book. Discipleship does not come with a discount code. Discipleship is not a bargain hunter's game. You either pay it all, or you don't pay it at all. And we need to be all in. We need to be invested. We need to value the right things. We need to put our aim and our treasure in those things that last. And not waste our time, waste our energy, waste our attention on things that are trivial and meaningless in this life. That will not lead us to spiritual satisfaction for all eternity. But if you're not a Christian here this morning, I want you to think about that example of the checkout line. Because you've put something in your basket in this life, no matter who you are. Every day, we're all putting things into our baskets. And eventually, we'll get there to that checkout line, and we will have to give an account for everything that we have done in this life, for everything that we valued, for everything that we spent our time on, for everything that we invested ourselves in. And God, the great judge, will look one by one at those things. Hey, did you really think before you put this in the basket? Did you really think about that? Is this what you wanted to spend your money on? And if you're not in a relationship with the Lord today, then that checkout, that judgment is not going to go well for you. And I hope you'll consider those things today. And if necessary, you want to study more about God and about his plan for you and about what Jesus did, then let us know. But if you're ready to commit yourself to the Lord today, we'll baptize you, we'll walk beside you, we will collaborate with you, and we will hold you up courageously through this life so that you can get to that checkout someday, unashamed. You're subject to the gospel call. Please come as we stand and sing.